5700. RE/MAX encourages you to join them in supporting public broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two, Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. This week, most of the programs on Focus that you're hearing are archives. They're repeats of earlier broadcasts. This morning here in this part of the show, it's a new program with live guests here in the studio, and I'm very pleased that they're both here. Both of them have actually been on this program before. A Scottish folk singer Jean Redpath is here, and also Julie Byerler. She's the musical director of the Chorale, also the founder of the Chorale, a musical group here in Champaign-Urbana. She's also a teacher, a singer, a choral director. And the reason that Jean is here is that she's going to be performing with the Chorale on New Year's Eve at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. We'll talk a little bit about that and other things as well. And if folks who are listening have questions they'd like to call in, they can certainly do that too. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Jean was born in Edinburgh, went to University of Edinburgh, and was involved in the School of Scottish Studies there, which collects and preserves the oral traditions of Scotland. She came to this country in 61, got involved in the American folk scene, and has toured extensively since 1962 throughout this country, and also has performed in Canada, Australia. She has given programs in South America, Hong Kong. She has more than 40 recordings, and the most recent is on her own label. It's By Request, and it features the selections that people ask her to sing when she gives performances, and perhaps we'll play something from that here this morning. Otherwise, if you're interested in sampling her music, you can go down to wherever it is you buy CDs, and you will find them. And thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
How exactly did Jean become involved with the Chorale?
It's all Julie's fault.
Well, it was a couple years ago when I ran across a series of Celtic music that I was planning to do in the spring and thought, well, who might we have as a guest? Not to sing with us, you understand, but just to be a featured guest. Mm-hmm. And I had heard Jean in the 80s just on a sound check at Methodist Church in Urbana, and somehow that called up in my memory. So I called and talked to her agent and said, could she come? And she did. And it's been a really interesting and wonderful friendship that has evolved and connection to both to the Chorale and to Champaign-Urbana. This is not new territory for Jean. She's
You've been here a number of times before and given concerts.
Indeed. In fact, I can't remember the name of the residence, but I did a live-in artist-in-residence at the university at one point, one of the halls.
Allen Hall, probably. Yeah. Unit 1 would have been the thing. Yeah.
That was quite an experience.
That's an interesting thing. There were more programs like that a long time ago, and I'm not sure how many there are still. One of these things where a person comes from different walks of life and different backgrounds, and they actually live there and have a lot of time, spend a lot of time with the students, and then sometimes do give public programs and lectures and things like that that are open to the outside. But mostly, I think the idea is for whoever that person is, the person in residence, to be there and to spend as much time with the students who live there in Allen Hall as possible.
It was also baptism by total immersion. The only brief I was given was, if your door is open, it means that you are game to talk to, eat with, sing with, talk at. If the door is shut, we'll leave you alone. And most of my waking hours, I was talking or being talked at. It was fascinating. Exhausting, but fascinating.
Yeah, I imagine it. I'm sure that it's both those things. So you had a good time?
I did, indeed. I came back for more, I guess.
Actually, what happened after she'd been with us in the spring, the Chorale went on tour in Italy in this past June. And as I was speaking to Jean, she said, well, if you just have come to my country, I would have come with you to sing. And I said, truly, is that right? And she said, yes. And so as a consequence of that, we are indeed going to tour again in August of 06 with Jean coming along to be our guest performer again. But originally, I think what the connection you asked about with the Chorale was the scholarship program, because it was that concert that Jean performed. And I think she was taken with the young people and that part of the Chorale's mission that supports young artists with scholarships for those who are going to go on to study at the university level. And throughout this two-year association, two-and-a-half-year association, she has really done a great deal of, what shall I say, advertising on our behalf about this kind of program, the carrying on of music into the future generations.
Yeah. I know that's something that you personally are very interested in, have devoted a lot of energy to, with working with young singers.
Right. Well, not only singers, musicians in general. We don't limit it to singers. But hopefully the people who will, after their formal education, go into communities with their regular job and provide opportunities for community folk to participate in instrumental or choral groups like the chorale, realizing that everyone musical life doesn't end with schooling. And I think that was the part that brought Jean back again, and in fact, her kind offer to come for this New Year's Eve on behalf of that very program. This is our fundraising event, the only event for which we charge an admission to support our programs all year long, but most particularly the scholarship program. So she's really here. It's a one reason we're calling it Gifts from the Heart, as a matter of fact, this evening.
Oh, there's malice aforethought. Julie doesn't know this. I've been working up to this for 2 years. See, once the group gets to Scotland, I plan to make a great deal of noise about the fact that, see, these nice people from Champaign-Urbana can find the time and the energy and the commitment and the dedication to raise money to give kids. Why can't you do that in Scotland? So I'm hoping if love of their own culture won't do it, maybe outright shame will.
And I know you're not above shaming people.
What, best chance of getting action out of a Scot, I think.
Yeah. I'm just curious about whether over the years have young performers, singers particularly, come to you and asked for advice about their technique or their career or
yes,
anything like that?
In varying forms, David, and my answers have taken even more various forms. At this age and stage, I'm with Kirsten Flagstad. What you really need is a comfortable shoe. but my formula for many years was, yes, if you're thinking of doing this, several things you should have. Twice the normal amount of stamina, the ability to sleep anywhere, under any conditions for as long as is possible, or not sleep, to eat anything under any conditions or not. If you have some talent after that, it's a help, but it's certainly not crucial. You need the others first. Mostly, if you're not sure that this is what you want to do, then it isn't. If you have a choice, do something else. And if you have no choice, then you're one of the lucky ones.
How many days now out of the year are you traveling? Or say away from home in the process of either performing or going to some place that you're going to perform?
It's quite civilized at this point. Not many. I would say maybe 3 months out of the year I will be traveling somewhere doing something. But after 30 years out of a suitcase, it feels like lazy. There's the Puritan ethic again. Feels like lazy.
Well, for somebody who doesn't do it, that might still feel like a lot. But I'm sure that there are probably other people who spend more time on the road. And in the past, you have spent a lot more time
on the
road.
Well, I lived out of a suitcase, literally. I mean, people said, how do you travel that much? It wasn't a case of traveling. That was how I lived. And the mental switch makes a big difference. You know, travel, sleep, eat, perform. Launder, travel, sleep, eat, perform. It's a rhythm you get into, and it's quite difficult to do it on short-term basis. So if you're looking at it, as the card says, you know, I thought I had a normal life until I described it to somebody once, and their reaction was quite different. If you do it from a normal viewpoint, then it is a little strange. If you do it all the time, it's just another muscle.
Yeah. Our guests here in this part of Focus 580, Jean Redpath and Julie Byler. Jean is a singer. She's been around for a while, performing traditional music of Scotland particularly, well known for her performing Robert Burns. And she has many CDs available, including a brand new one, which is music that is often requested, and it's titled By Request. It's on her own label Gene Redpath Records, and we'll play something for you in a little bit here. She's here in Champaign-Urbana to give a performance. This will be New Year's Eve at the Virginia Theater with the Chorale, and our second guest here is Julie Beiler. She's the conductor and the founding music director of the Chorale. It's been in existence since 1982, centering around the theme Gifts from the Heart, the program here, and that will be 7 o'clock, December 31st at the Virginia Theater. And tickets are available there. You can call the box office 356-9063. Or do you think if you just people just showed up there, there will be tickets on the night of the performance?
They are reserved seats, and there's no way I can predict. I'd say if you want a good seat, you should call or stop by. The first couple times we did this back in the early 90s, we did sell out with general admission, in fact, turned a couple hundred people away, unhappily for both of us, I'm sure. So we got smart and made our tickets reserved.
Yeah, okay. So it would probably be a good idea if people want to attend, they get their ticket. And if people have not been, I can't imagine there's anybody in Champaign-Urbana, well, maybe there are some people in Champaign-Urbana that have never been in the Virginia Theater ever. It's a theater, a grand old movie palace. It was once a vaudeville theater, showed movies for a long time, then stopped being a regular theater, but now there's a film series going on. They're trying to raise some money to preserve the theater, and right. it is still in use for various kinds of performances.
In fact, that's why we're actually there. It was our idea. I attended the last official movie showing, and it was some concern as to what was going to happen to the theater. So we, looking for venues all the time, thought, well, perhaps people of Champaign-Urbana would support this as a performing venue downtown. So we did that twice in 6 months, once in May, and then we hit upon the New Year's Eve deal. And then we found the slides in the Virginia. You talk about it being vaudevillian, the glass slides that no one that had not been unearthed, some 2,000 of them, having on them artwork and lyrics to songs that during the vaudeville shows, the Wurlitzer, of course, would rise out of the orchestra pit and people would then get to sing along. That's a tradition we've continued. Warren York sits at the Wurlitzer and with great delight and loving care and attention to that instrument. And Dan Perino, who has been with us countless times and is another one of our really hero supporters, will be there encouraging everyone to sing along. So, in fact, that is why we're at the Virginia, because we, having now been placed on the National Historic Register and in the midst of its own reconstruction, we are supporting that. And it's a good two-hour, give or take, evening of musical entertainment, lots of different things happening.
Yeah, so people are looking for something to do, particularly with their family on New Year's Eve. That would be a nice thing.
And
to,
in the early part, so that you can still do whatever you wish afterward.
Well, if people would like to call in here, we're here live and open to questions. If you'd like to talk with our guests, 333-WILL or 9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, should we play something? Would you like to... I'd like us to play something from your new CD by request. Do you have a request?
Rose of Allendale.
All right. Rose of Allendale.
That if you would tell be me cut it's 15. Not on there, I'll be so embarrassed.
No. It's it's here. It's cut number 15. And we're ready to go. Here it is. Gene Redpath.
East and to the west, and fate began. soul is still she to be in sorrow's wonder. Though tempest wreck my lonely bark and may rend the quivering sail, one maiden warm withstood the storm. 'Twas the rose of Allendale, sweet rose of Allendale, sweet rose of Allendale, one maiden warm withstood the storm. 'Twas the rose of Allendale. And when were parched on Africa's burning sands, she whispered hopes of happiness and tales of foreign lands. My life had been a wilderness, unblessed by fortune's gales. Had fate not sweet rose of Allendale, sweet rose of Allendale, sweet rose of Allendale, had fate not linked my lot to her. Sweet rose of Allendale, sweet rose. Sweet rose of Allendale, that fate that linked my heart to her. Sweet rose of Allendale.
Jean Redpath. It's Rose of Allendale. That's from her most recent CD, By Request, on her own label, Jean Redpath Records. Can you tell us a couple of things about the song?
It's pianist tool music, really. It's the somewhat sweet Victorian approach, I think, to Scottish music, which, of course, is very dear to the Scottish heart, which strives to have at least one pinky starched before death. Preferably both, so it's not broad Scots. It's by a man called Jeffries, and one of the other songs that he wrote is also beloved of the Saturday Night Inebriate and gets butchered on a regular basis, so it gives me a good deal of pleasure to be able to sing something like this. It's a lovely melody. It's just a lovely melody. I have a great deal of trouble with the song. I realised once it was playing that the wags in the summer school classes in Stirling destroyed more good songs for me because they came up with these interpretations that had never occurred to me. And there's a line in there that said, one maiden warm withstood the storm, and one chap chose to sing it as a presentation piece and insisted on singing One Maiden Form Withstood the Storm, and it pretty well destroyed the verse for me. I'm not sure I can get through the song anymore with a straight face.
So this is a song that actually people still sing?
Yes. It didn't. Mary of Argyll is extremely well known in Scotland, particularly my generation and older. Maybe the next one, but certainly no further than that. But Rose of Allendale, my mother knew it, I discovered, after I learned it from somewhere else. She had an enormous repertoire. This was in there too. So it's sort of nace. What it is nace. It's not broad Scots, but the melody comes first always with me anyhow.
Yeah, well, we have someone who'd like to talk with you, and we'll do that here on our line number one, someone listening in Champagne.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to say we're taking two more couples, my spouse and I, to hear this concert. We spent a year in Edinburgh, so I'm very, very fond of Scotland. You talked about the pluses and the minuses of the United States and Scotland. I think, personally, that there are a lot of pluses in Scotland. What do you think?
oh, well, it's the center of the universe. I don't, you know, not that I'm prejudiced or anything. I would agree with you. Actually, I was very grateful that you put on some Edinburgh weather for me this morning.
Yes, I know. It's Edinburgh weather, and I don't like it at all.
Well, the skin is waterproof, so you're safe enough. I'm glad to know you've been there, but there's a rule, you know, everybody has to go at least twice.
Yes.
Once as a sampler.
I'm hoping to go back.
Wonderful.
Yes,
thank you for bringing people to the concert.
And thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Others are certainly welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. On this performance, is Gene actually, are you actually singing with, that is, at the same time and together with the chorale, or is it a separate sort of deal?
No, we should make that distinction. Gene is a guest on her own. And the chorale also will be singing.
No choral backing.
No, we don't do
she
that.
She doesn't know it yet, David, but yes, they are,
oh,
actually.
Well, only as volunteers and part of the audience, I think.
Oh, okay. Not any formal sense.
As in audience participation, but I've threatened them with disembowelment if they don't lend those
voices. She was at rehearsal last night and gave us a little preview of the fact that they might be called upon to bolster the congregation. Actually, mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm trying still yet to learn from Gene that I think is so not USA is the spontaneity with which people burst into song. You know, here it's a serious thing and we have to think about it and rehearse it and practice it. But my experience, I have had the two-time experience in Scotland now, so I'm more or less seasoned. However, the first time I went to Scotland to visit Gene, we were out at a small restaurant, and after a completely full meal, plenty of food and drink, Jean announced that she felt that perhaps she might like to sing now. And because we are from a place where that doesn't happen often, I just said, well, okay, fine. And so she, after seeking permission from those who were eating, began to sing. And she had asked me earlier if I thought I might like to sing a duet. She and her mother, Bluebell, I don't know Bluebell only by stories, but sang a lot of duets together. She said, would you like to sing one with me? And I, in a weak moment, said, sure. Well, what I didn't know is that at the restaurant she was planning to introduce one of those songs that we were to sing together, which she did without telling me, spontaneously, and said, oh, just sing along. It's completely foreign to me, and it's a panic trigger, you know. But we did, and people politely listened.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
good.
Didn't you? Couldn't tell that, huh? So if I have the wherewithal and haven't completely lost it, maybe we'll do one of those New Year's Eve. But it's a gift to be able to just do that and be concerned only with the song and the melody and the emotion rather than all of the trappings that we get carried away with. But no, we'll definitely be giving the stage to Jean herself. The chorale will focus on songs from the heart. We'll be doing things like Blue Skies and Stormy Weather and Scarlet Ribbons and Bridge Over Troubled Waters and When I Fall in Love, those kinds of things, interspersing them actually with real love letters written by folks over the course of from the 1100s to present day.
That's Saturday night at the Virginia Theater, the chorale, with special guest Gene Redpath, and our guest here this morning on the program, Gene Redpath and Julie Byler. She's the music director, the founding director of the chorale. They have been now going for 23 years?
It was a one-night stand for 23 years, right. We began in Mahomet because the Main Street merchants wanted Christmas carols on their Christmas walk that first weekend in December. Mm-hmm. And I was a church choir director there, and they said, well, put together a small group. So characteristically, we rehearsed four times for the Christmas carols, and then we did our Christmas caroling and thought it was over, but apparently not.
Still going after all those years. Very
right.
Good. So this is should be a lot of fun, a lovely event. And if you're looking for something to do on New Year's Eve, suitable for families, that would be a fine thing. At 7 o'clock, the Virginia Theater, it is reserved seating. So the suggestion is if you want to go, get your tickets now, in advance. Don't just go and hope that you will have a seat if you really want to attend.
There probably will be some seats at the end. But I would urge if you care at all where you sit to check it out.
You want to get a choice seat.
Right.
Better do that in advance. We have some other callers here, and we'll talk with someone else. Also in Champaign, line one.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about the By Request album.
Sure.
Are there any songs on it by Robert Burns?
Would you believe I don't know? Give me 2 seconds.
We're just passing over the booklet from the CD.
Yes. My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose is on there. The Winter That Has Passed is Burns. That's Buttons. Burns.
Who?
Somebody once asked me, who is this guy Buns? Ye Banks and Braes of Bonnie Doon. I hadn't realized, indeed.
Thank you. I love Robert Burns.
And Auld Lang Syne, of course, which is New Year's Eve incarnate. Yes, there are 4. I'm so glad you asked. I didn't know that.
Thank you. I love Robert Burns.
Actually, if you are coming New Year's Eve, Gene will give us the real version of Auld Lang Syne. And we close our evening with the one that we all know, so she's conceded if we listen to the real one that we can all sing the one that's familiar.
Mm. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Very good. Let's go on here. We have another Champaign listener. This is line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Actually, I'm not a resident of Champaign. I'm visiting with my daughter. I'm from Pennsylvania. But my grandfather emigrated when he was 10 from Dunfermline in Scotland. So I have been back twice to visit in the area, and I love it.
It's a lovely place.
Wonderful. I was wondering if your guest knows a song, a Scottish song, that I've heard on records and tapes, but I don't know the name. Some of the lyrics go, speed bonny boat, like a bird on a wing, over the sea to sky.
Sky boat song, indeed. Yes, another lovely tune.
Well, yes, it's very nice. And I'm very happy to have been here and fortunate to hear your interview on the station.
Well, thank you, kind lady, and thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Have you recorded that?
I haven't, but I can probably come up with at least a verse. Julie mentioned that I used to get requests, but I stopped asking for them because frequently I had far too much to say about the song nobody really wanted to hear. But the important part is that if you don't really believe a song, then you really don't have any right to sing it. And ever since I went off Charles Edward Stuart, it's very difficult to sing pro-Jacobite songs because he's probably one of the worst things that ever happened to Scotland. But that doesn't change the fact that it's probably one of the best-known melodies to come out of the country. Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry. Carry the lad that's born to be king over the sea to sky. Gorgeous tune, and of course, dripping with Celtic melancholia. Mm-hmm. It's this, you know, the sad edge to so much of the material that comes out of Scotland.
How many songs do you think you know?
1,236 and a chorus of another one. I haven't learned the words yet.
That's absolutely remarkable that you should be able to come up with such a precise answer.
Yeah, it's known as motor bouthing, David.
Our guests here this morning, Scottish folk singer Jean Redpath. She has been performing in this country and many other places too since the early 1960s, has made more than 40 recordings. The most recent, we just played you a sample, is By Request on her label Jean Redpath Records. She has performed all over the place. She's received many honors for her work. She's a member of the British Empire. She's not wearing her medal right at the moment. I'm sure it's back in the hotel. She also has her portrait has been painted and hung in the Scottish National Portrait Gallery in Edinburgh in a section that's dedicated to Scots who have made significant contributions to their country and their culture. And also with us is Julie Byler. She is the conductor and the founding music director of the Chorale. She's a teacher, a singer, a choral director. The Chorale's been performing since 1982. They're in their 23rd year, and they will perform, and Jean will be the special guest at a performance at the Virginia Theater on New Year's Eve. And so you might want to take that in. And questions here are welcome, too. People want to call in 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, of these 1,000 however many songs there are, every time you give a performance, is it different?
Oh, I hope so.
So you're on the spot, you're making the decision from one, or do you when you begin, you have an idea of pretty much what you're going to do, and
it changes. But one of the great freedoms of being a solo performer is that I can change my mind literally mid-song. I've developed over the years a presentation that I should bow in the direction of people like Sam Hinton in San Diego and actor friend John Kearney, Richard Dyer Bennett, who was the first person I ever saw do folk in quotes in Soup and Fish, you know, full formal tux on the stage in Town Hall in New York, changed my perspective of what singing was and could be and what material you could present. We're back to your original question, David. Being asked why I do it or did I have any words of wisdom, I think, au fond, the only real crux is this something that you have to do, which means that you really believe it's worth doing and that people are going to be improved by listening to it. It's basically the same thing that Julie's doing with the Chorale. You ought to believe that you are actually going to touch somebody with what you're doing. And if you don't believe that, I don't think you have any right to be doing it. And you should not be surprised if it doesn't work, if it doesn't grab somebody. The whole notion of singing is entertainment. What was the quote, Julie, we were kicking around a week or two ago? I don't know how singing came to be regarded as entertainment, because basically what it is a necessary state of being. It's much, much more natural form of expression for me than talking, despite the amount of the latter that I do. It's still a great deal easier to express strong emotion with a song than it is with a sentence.
Again, I think it's indicative of what I was saying earlier, of the spontaneity of it all. I remember when Jean was first coming, I asked her agent, I said, well, I need to make a program, and so I need to know what Jean is singing so I can list it. And she said, that you'll never get that. She said, just say something like, Jean Redpath sings. So that's what it will say on your program. But how wonderful that is to be able to have that kind of freedom to just express whatever it is at the moment. And she actually, I'm speaking for her, but I've been in the audience where she'll try something and it will work or not. And so that gives you the freedom to be successful all the time if you just go with what's happening.
Or not.
Or not.
There have been some nights where I've tried several things and none of them worked, and those were not happy experiences. But as they say, all experience is useful.
Well, how do you gauge the audience response? How do you know whether the song is coming across or not?
I think it's purely intuitive. I really don't know. And it's not something I've ever questioned until people like you started asking me. I mean, why do I need to know how I do it? I like watching television. I don't know how that works either. You can smell it. You can feel it. The times that make all of the peeling paint and 11 hours in an airport and trips to the chiropractor because you've been sleeping in hard beds worth it are those rare moments when you can get 2,000 people in a hall all on the same wavelength for about 4 minutes, and it raises the goosebumps up my spine and over the crown of my head. Doesn't happen very often, but that's always what I'm after.
I think, too, if you've been to hear Jean, it's not just singing. Jean weaves her songs together with her wit and her information, and I think as you're doing that as a performer, you can tell what's getting a reaction and where people are, and so I think that's helpful.
And at least, I think people should not, you've been doing this for a long time now, but I think one should not underestimate how difficult this is.
Oh, it's all pre-recorded, David. It's not difficult.
I think about how when people are asked what would be the most frightening thing you can possibly imagine, it's getting up in front of a group and speaking. So I would imagine that a lot of people would think what you do, because you come out on the stage all by yourself in front of the audience and you're kind of making it up as you're going along, that a lot of people would be terrified of the very idea of doing what you do. Do you still get nervous?
Oh, hopefully, yes.
Yes?
The day I stop getting nervous, I've shot it. I should do something else.
It's a lot like performing in a good hall, acoustically speaking, for singers. You come out and all you have is what you've got. If you do it and it comes back to you acoustically, let's just say, it feeds you. And so I'm sure that's a similar kind of thing when you get fed by the audience. And that's what it is. You're that much more inspired and it's much easier. Gets easier.
Yeah. It's something, too, I'm sure that people don't really realize is how physical an act singing is, that it is physically demanding, and you have to do what you can to, I'm sure, to keep yourself in good condition, and not just your vocal tract in good condition, but all of you in good condition as much as you can.
My schedule of choice is to sleep in two halves, and this is from many, many years of day-night rehearsal. You know, if you were doing this on a regular basis, you go to work when everybody else is finished for the day. Thank God it's Monday. Friday is Friday, Saturday, Sunday were high points of performing weekends. So I'm very used to getting up early in the morning because I had a plane to catch, checking in someplace, go back to sleep for 2 or 3 hours and getting up and starting again. So most of my days had two mornings. But it does mean that you're in full production at 9 or 10 o'clock at night when any normal person is thinking of climbing into slippers or even climbing into bed. It's a curious rhythm, and I think it takes being born almost as an owl rather than a lark to do it.
And were you?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. It was the end of all discipline when I discovered that the world didn't actually stop at midnight.
When you're not performing, what do you do with your time? What do you like? What other things do you like to do besides singing?
Taking photographs, watching birds, listening to other people sing, all sorts of things. Hawaiian slack key guitar, you know, watching ice skating. Many of the things I have no great desire to do, but love to watch somebody else doing them well.
Gene's CDs, almost exclusively, I would say, are covers of her own photography. This one, by request, no exception. So when we went to visit, most of our time was spent stopping the car by the side of the road to having photography duels, you know. So she's really we've shared photographs back and forth. But the wonderful photography is on most of those CDs, the Burns ones, particularly with all the floral close-ups, just wonderful things.
All right, very good. Well, again, if you'd like to hear some of Jean's CDs, you just go down to wherever it is you buy CDs, because there are quite a few, and her most recent is By Request, which is her compilation of frequently requested music, and it's on her label, Jean Ridpath Records. Has there ever been a case where someone has made a request, a particular song, and you just said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that?
I don't say no, I'm sorry, I just say no.
No sorry about it. I'm just not doing it. I'm the singer. This is my show. I'm in charge here.
No, actually, I make it very clear at the outset. If they have requests, I'm happy to talk to people after the concert out in the foyer, and they can give me all the requests they wanted then.
Let's talk with someone here from the campus who is listening on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. You may have already answered this question. I don't know, but I know you do a lot, you said, of Robert Burns' songs. And I was just curious, now, are these tunes that Robert Burns wrote as well, or just the words? I mean, did he actually write the tunes as well?
No.
Okay.
He wrote no tunes. He was a fairly educated musician, although he said himself that he was an indifferent singer. He played, I believe, the German flute. He had done a little bit of studying of music, but I think it was mostly natural. But what he did have was an incredible ear for traditional music. He was a collector. He was given very little credit for that. He sent songs to two editors for inclusion in a couple of publications of Scottish songs. And in there you will find everything from a song that he picked up, melody and text both, and transmitted as it was from tradition, all the way down to a melody that he heard which was originally intended for either fiddle or, worse still, the bagpipe, and wrote texts for them. And in the middle you will have choruses that he collected and fleshed out the text, songs that he collected and rewrote. Frequently he will buy, he will find a song in tradition that he liked the melody of, and what he was a genius at doing was presenting the melody in two different tempos. And it's astounding how the mileage you could get out of a tune. I'm trying to remember what's in. Landlady, count the law, and the day is near the dawn. We're all blind drunk boys, and I'm but jolly foo. Hi, tutty tatey, how tutty tatey, hi, tutty tatey, was foo the new. It's a drinking song, which may ring very faint bells with you, because if you steady it up and give it a much more formal speed and delivery, becomes the informal Scottish national anthem.
Oh my.
Scots wahi we Wallace bled, Scots wham Bruce has often led. Welcome to your gory bed, or to victory. Now, I would never have thought of doing that with the original tune, and it has everything to do with tempo, of course, but also with the words, which are pretty powerful.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thank you for the call. A drinking song becoming the informal Scots anthem.
Just the melody, yeah. He recognized, you know, the potential of that tune.
Was it the Star-Spangled Banner? Didn't that also start out as a drinking song? The melody came from someplace else. The melody existed.
The melody existed before Francis
Scott Key wrote the words.
That's correct. Right. So it makes you wonder, doesn't it, where all those good melodies come from.
All right. Let's talk with someone else here. Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi. A friend and I like to sing Vermeo, and we don't know anything about where it came from. I know it's Scottish, but just wonder, Gene, where does it come from? What does it mean? I mean, I know it's a sad song.
It comes from the island of Eriskay on the southern end of the Outer Hebrides. If you look at the map of Scotland, there is an arc like the Florida Keys that runs from Lewis in the north all the way down to Eriskay in the south.
Yes, I know.
Eriskay is now uninhabited, I believe. And it's collected by Marjorie Kennedy Fraser and Kenneth MacLeod, who collaborated, and this is one of these historic arguments which will never, ever be settled. Is it better to leave a song in its original form to die or vanish with the last person who knows it in its original form, or do you collect it and print it in the form of the day? And they have been criticized a great deal for, again, prettifying and anglicising. The only thing I would say of the Eriskay Lovelelt is it has been around long enough and sung often enough, and that melody, of course, is enough to give it a life of its own in the English language. Just don't confuse it with its Gaelic original. I don't speak Gaelic, but for instance, as you know, the melody is Vermeo Rovano. Vermeo Rovani. Vermeo Sad am I without Well, that's a very extended melody line. The original tempo is something like, which is already you've got a totally different feel, and with another language. Beautiful, beautiful song in its own right, but two very different things.
Thank you.
But keep singing. There aren't many of us left.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Are there, I expect that probably be, there are arguments over or arguments between people about particular tunes and how they're performed, and I'm sure that the arguments center around what's authentic or who's got the earliest version or the most original version, and I'm sure that actually there is no really have to say, well, how do you know?
Basically, I don't care. I'm not that much of a purist. The only thing I've ever said was, if you're going to sing a Broad Scots song, run it by a native first. You could come out with some real clangers if you don't. Otherwise, you know, if you enjoy it, sing it. I wouldn't automatically say that you should then hire a hall and sell tickets, but that's, you know, that's another thing entirely. Yes, there are always people who will say, well, that's, you know, that's not the right version. Or the only reason that I make a point of Auld Lang Syne is that Burns himself, during his own lifetime, really was hung, drawn, and quartered musically and textually fairly often, because one of his publishers was an Edinburgh chap who belonged again to the Stiff Pinky school, who would get a song from Burns and in very few words, he would think, I like the words, but I don't like the tune. So he would publish it to a different melody, just gratuitously. You know, Burns had the melody in mind when he wrote those words. They're not poems that are set to music. He started with the melody always and wrote words for it. So when he wrote a song, not a poem. He actually wrote twice as many songs as poems. And I think it was outrageous arrogance on Thompson's part to change that. And frequently he would then think, that tune's great, but the words don't fit it too well, so he changed the words as well. So what we finish up with now are some things that have a nodding acquaintance with Burns, but not much else.
We were talking a little bit earlier, I think you were talking about how singing is a natural kind of expression for people, at least for some people. And you don't have to go back too far when you get to a time when if people were going to entertain themselves and each other, that's what they did. They sang, and if there were some people that could play instruments, as however well they could play them, they played. And they did that in their homes, and they did that in where they went to have a shot of something, and you know, wherever people gathered together, they made music, and that's something that we really have gotten away from, because now it's too easy for some other kind of entertainment
headphones and stuff.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And we're self-conscious, I think.
Well, this is the question I'm getting at, for particularly for Julie, since you have worked with people who really wanted to be singers. What do you say to people who say, "Well, I can't sing"? Maybe they would even confess that they would like to be able to sing, but somehow they would say they can't. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, really, when someone says they can't.
I'm not exactly sure either, and I tell them they're wrong. They've either been told that, or somehow they've come to believe. There are very few people who cannot match tones. Someone will say, "I'm tone deaf." Not really. Now, there are some people who sing in several different keys. In one tune.
In one
yeah. But
one tune, yeah.
Very few people who cannot be taught to sing. And I think it is that the conditioning, again, there are so many other things to do, so many other ways to make music, so many other people to do it for you, that it doesn't seem to have the same value, that it's the one thing we carry with us all the time that we can use anytime, no extra equipment, no assembly required. It's just right there. But I do think if we're not careful, we'll become too particular, and it's not that we don't work hard. I mean, I make my singers work hard, and I want them to sing well. But they're not mutually exclusive. But it's that self-conscious factor, I think, too, that people think, oh, I just really can't do that. And as you know, as an individual, when you join with others, you're always capable of the whole is greater than any single, you know. So that's something that people realize who haven't sung in a long time, that being with a group is really...
I think we're having.
Yes. Well, I wasn't looking in that direction.
Someone was
on purpose.
Offering a commentary.
Well, that's from someone who knows she can sing by herself and has never said, I can't sing. But those who feel that they can't get strength from people around them and security, and it gives them confidence, really.
I'm just winding you up, Julie, as you well know. Actually, one of the hardest things for me to deal with is for people to say, when I say, come on, sing, audience, but we're not going to sing in front of you. So what I'm about is encouraging other people to sing. You know, I would get pushed out of shape if they didn't listen. I understand, but that's not really what I'm about at all. And to have somebody say they're not going to sing because I'm there is about the worst thing they can say to me.
Yeah, and that happens a lot. They think,
Once in a while, you're a pro.
I'm not going to sing in front of you.
Well, I guess the real crux of this is, why are people singing in the first place? It's all very well to say, I only sing in the shower. There's nothing wrong with singing in the shower. It's an expression. The self-consciousness, yes, but there's a big, big difference between singing spontaneously in any key or in 15 keys and thinking that you have to do it as a performance of some kind.
Mm. Well, you will have an opportunity to do a little singing along on New Year's Eve at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. This is a New Year's Eve celebration featuring the chorale, and our guest here, Julie Beiler, is the music director. They've been now going for 23 years. And as a special guest, Gene Redpath will be singing as well on the same stage, not at the same time as the chorale, on the same stage as the chorale. This is at the Virginia Theater on December 31st, 7 o'clock in the evening, reserved seating. So if you want to attend, do get your tickets beforehand. Don't just go down there and hope that there will be a seat. And if you're interested, of course, in hearing more music from Jean, she has recorded many CDs. We played one cut from this one that's most recent. It's titled By Request on her label, Jean Redpath Records. You should find that. I'm sure others, if you go down to wherever it is you buy your music.
And for those who are just dying to hear bagpipes, you should know that we'll have Jean piped on stage by John Lynn.
She will not be playing them herself, though.
I don't think so, though.
Oh, all right. Very good. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thanks, David.
The show, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. The broadcast also made possible with support from Wind, Water, and Light, now in downtown Champaign, featuring holiday gift ideas from local and national artisans and contemporary fine crafts, such as painting, photography, jewelry, pottery, wood, fiber, and more. Wind, Water, and Light, far from the ordinary at 10 Main Street in downtown Champaign. That's it for us. We want you to stay tuned, though. Coming up next, the Afternoon Magazine. Tom Rogers is sitting in as host today. Tom?
Good afternoon, David. Good afternoon, everybody. As we head into the Afternoon Magazine on this Wednesday afternoon of the holiday week, we have an archive segment in our 1 o'clock interview segment. Celeste Quinn talked earlier with Philip Dre, who's the author of a book called